We begin our series where we look at the stories that dominated the news throughout the year. And we joined on the line for this segment by Hafiz Ibrahim Musa. Hafiz is a well-known and respected journalist and presenter at Radio Islam. And today we begin by looking at Ramaphosa's new dawn. Hafiz joins us on the line. Abizab, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Mufti.
How are you this morning?
Very, very good, alhamdulillah, Mufti Saab. A nice change to be having a public holiday after quite a while. Alhamdulillah, just taking it easy.
Alhamdulillah. So when we look at Ramaphosa's new dawn, the story starts at Nasrec.
That's right, Mufti. You know, when we talk about the Ramaphosa's new dawn, obviously during the series we look at local politics, we look at international developments over the next 2 weeks or so. But I think there's no running away from it that this has been one of the biggest stories of 2018, the changeover in political power, both at the level of the ANC and how that translated into the corridors of power. So I think it's only logical that we start off it. I don't know if it's the most palatable choice on a public holiday for people to be talking about something that sometimes people would like to shun and just forget at the end of the year, the politics and the dirt and the crime that goes around our politics. But nonetheless, I think, as you mentioned, it did start off in December, and if I look at the date, it's quite interesting. It's almost exactly a year to the date when the ANC announced the results to its elective conference. Yourself and the team were out there at Nasrec. This actually happened on the 18th of December 2017, so yeah, almost exactly a year. And as we know, the results there were very, very evenly poised. Ramaphosa just taking the ANC presidency by a sliver. He obviously defeating the other candidate there, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, by a very small amount of votes. There was euphoria and you know, a lot of excitement when the results were announced and Ramaphosa declared as the new president. But at the same time, you know, you had the reaction from the former president Jacob Zuma. The reaction on his face said a lot. And after that initial euphoria, there was a kind of tension. How are we going to move this organization together? Because it's so evenly split. Ramaphosa might have taken victory, but it wasn't a clean victory for his faction. You had the likes of David Mabuza becoming the deputy president, a very uncertain character. Then you have Ace Makashule and Jesse Duarte taking senior positions in the top six. So it's really very evenly poised. So from that moment onwards, people had spoken a lot about the need for unity in the African National Congress, how difficult the balancing act it is going to be for Cyril Ramaphosa, and how difficult is it going to be going forward, having two centers of power, Ramaphosa now the president of the ANC, Jacob Zuma the president of the country. And obviously from that period, December, January until February, there were now a lot of discussions behind the scenes on how to strike the balance and how to you know, minimize conflict between these two centers of power, inevitably leading to a discussion about the removal or recall of the president, Jacob Zuma.
As you indicated, you know, busy month that led up to that, in particular February, was quite a busy month in itself.
Absolutely. I mean, maybe at that particular time, everybody just took it in their stride. But in retrospect, if we look back at what happened in February, it's certainly a heck of a lot of events happening in a short period of time. First of all, you have, after these calls for the recall of Jacob Zuma became louder, you have President Ramaphosa physically going over to the president, trying to negotiate with him. That doesn't seem to make any headway. And thereafter, you have an extraordinary ANC NEC meeting, and the ANC usually has lots of his meetings at the St. George's Hotel out in Irene, and you know, all the journalists clustering around there hoping to find out what is the outcome of this particular meeting. The meeting finally reports back that it has decided that Zuma must go. It's going to, and it, you know, physically or clearly announces that it will recall the president according to the ANC's own rules. The rationale for this, they say, they said at the time, was it was in the interest of South Africa, that things had changed in South Africa and that this was the best thing to do, and also to not fall into opposition measures that had been instituted in Parliament at that particular time. So ANC going public with this, and this is on a Tuesday. Wednesday, you have the president at that time, Jacob Zuma, going for the fight. So he goes for the jugular, he goes to the SABC, and he, you know, he does an interview saying that he's not going anywhere, and you know, why is the ANC rushing things? There should be an organized transition. And he famously says at that time, I asked the representatives of the NEC, what did I do wrong? And with a straight face, he says they weren't able to tell me what I did wrong. You know, so playing victim in all of this. In the background of all of this, what we do have, Mufti, is the EFF saying that they're going to take another vote of no confidence in Jacob Zuma in Parliament. Then you have the DA asking the Speaker of Parliament to postpone the State of Nation national address that's also going to happen in this particular period. And they said that, you know, they're simply not willing to sit in a State of the Nation address that will be addressed by Jacob Zuma. So all of this is happening in the background. Interestingly, the ANC, who is at loggerheads most of the time with the EFF on many factors, saying that they are willing to support the EFF motion of no confidence in Jacob Zuma. So quick turnaround. The parties have always been at loggerheads on Jacob Zuma particularly, and you know, the ANC has stood tooth and nail in Parliament protecting Jacob Zuma against EFF attacks. Now that particular change in tact. And then there was also a very rapid change from Jacob Zuma himself. So the man says early on that particular Wednesday in February, around the 14th, 15th, that he is not going anywhere, and he strikes a defiant note. And then he calls a late-night press conference on the same day, on that particular Wednesday. Characteristically late, he shows up for the conference, and after rambling on for a few minutes, this is the announcement that Jacob Zuma makes in February.
I have therefore come to the decision to resign as President of the Republic with immediate effect. Even though I disagree with the decision of the leadership of my organization, I have always been a disciplined member of the ANC. As I leave, I will continue to serve the people of South Africa as well as the ANC, the organization I have served all of my life in it. Countrymen, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you very much for your attention. Ngiyabonga. Ngiyabonga. Bayadanki. Thank you.
So, mostly, obviously, that was, it almost seems like a very, very long time ago, Jacob Zuma at the helm, and Jacob Zuma as the president of South Africa. He did bow out with a kind of dignity there, though at the end, and I think people might just gloss over it, but perhaps this is significant. He says, we will meet again. And it certainly seems as if he has no intention of just calling it a day and, you know, not leaving the ANC as it is. He seems to still want to play an active role in the ANC. having said that, February was not yet over. After Zuma resigns on Wednesday, Thursday, we have this. We have the incumbent, Cyril Ramaphosa, president of the ANC at that stage, being elected in by Parliament. And this is what happens thereafter on Thursday in Parliament, in the company of the Chief Justice, Mogoeng. He takes this oath to become the President of the Republic of South Africa.
Would you please rise, Mr. President-elect, and say after me?
Do justice to all.
And devote myself to the well-being of the Republic.
And do justice to the well-being of the Republic.
And all of its people.
And all of its people.
Would you please raise your right hand, Mr. President-elect, and say, so help me God.
So help me God.
The President of the Republic of South Africa. Congratulations.
February, so much political, posturing behind the scenes, so many negotiations, so much posturing by the politicians, but at the end it seems to all end well. Jacob Zuma going gracefully, no kind of violence or no kind of threats being issued, and Ramaphosa smoothly ascending to the highest office in the land.
Then the next thing for the president is to deliver his first State of the Nation address.
And that happens, yes, Mufti, one day after he's sworn in. So, how do you kind of capture the spirit of the nation, capture the developments of the past year, the progress that has been made, the challenges facing the country, when you literally one day in the highest office in the land? But obviously it's not just about the new figurehead, it's also a process, and there are personnel behind the scenes would be writing those addresses and keeping tabs on what needs to be said. Ramaphosa, in his first State of the Nation, then the Friday thereafter, one day after being sworn in, I think perhaps one of the more decisive speeches given by Ramaphosa, as we'll continue to discuss as we talk about his legacy and his challenges, we find that Ramaphosa is playing a very delicate balancing act. For many of his public pronouncements, is simply not decisive enough. And he kind of speaks in wishy-washy language, trying to appease everyone at the same time. But in this particular address, he was quite decisive. He sketched out a note of high positivity. He went back and he tried to, go back to the Mandela days, and perhaps his subliminal message there was trying to paint himself as a new Mandela. So looking at the 100th year or the centenary of Nelson Mandela, used that as a theme. The term that he coined was the new dawn. He spoke of this as being a new dawn. He spoke about kind of those rainbow nation ideals, the need for South Africans to all unite on a common set of principles. He made a lot of promises about holding conferences, summits, commissions of inquiry, but he did he was quite decisive to address some of the leftover bits of the old administration where it had failed miserably. So he was quite decisive in talking about the mess at SESA. He tried to address the size of his cabinet, the size of state, and saying that he's going to reevaluate whether cabinet and government needs to be so big. He spoke quite decisively about state capture. He spoke about state-owned entities and the problems of governance that were there. He spoke about the problems of SARS. And he comes out of all of this with another very strong theme that has obviously characterized the president. You know, you have these images of the president going out on walks and trying to encourage South Africans towards a healthy lifestyle. But together with that, he coins or takes from a particular song, highlights the particular words, Tuma Mina, and asks all South Africans to send themselves forward. He pledges that he'll send himself forward for the greater good of South Africa, and at the same time asks all South Africans to do the same. So quite, a positive note to start this particular presidency. Gets lots of people talking. Many people try to strike parallels with the Mandela era. But at the same time, many people caution, yes, this might be a breath of fresh air from the Zuma years, but certainly it's not going to be easy, and he has to walk the talk.
Talking about walking the talk, he then makes his presence felt with the first cabinet reshuffle.
And again, Mufti, this happened towards the closing days of February. After the State of the Nation, you have the budget that's delivered by Malusi Gigaba. So he allowed Malusi Gigaba to complete the delivery of the budget, which again was now a wake-up call, just showing the dire state of finances in South Africa. But after that, he announces his first reshuffle. He obviously, as is his deputy president, taking his former spot, you have David Mabuza becoming the deputy president. The important portfolio of finance goes to Nhlanhla Nene. Public enterprises goes to Pravin Gordhan. And in a kind of gesture to his opponent at NASREC, he brings in Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma into a position in the presidency. But we do see the act at that particular time for very controversial ministers involved in the so-called, or alleged to be involved in the so-called state capture project. We have Lynn Brown going, Musubeni Zwane going, Faith Mthambi going, Des van Rooyen going. So that was quite a significant shake-up in his cabinet in the early days. He was forced to make another change in the wake of the resignation of Nhlanhla Nene, a few months later. So Tito Mboweni then takes the position of finance. That still seems to be quite stable. And in November, he makes another change. So this is his second major cabinet reshuffle, necessitated by the departure of Malusi Gigaba and another death in his cabinet. So nothing too significant in that one. But the criticism has been throughout that why are there particular ministers like Mvula Mokonyane who still seem to be part of the structure, and a big criticism for Ramaphosa till the present moment is why does he still have a minister like Patabile Dlamini in his cabinet when successive courts have ruled against her, and it seems as if that all has to do with internal ANC politics and trying to steady the ship internally, which have led many analysts to say that he's putting the ANC ahead of the country.
What does Ramaphosa claim as his achievements?
So it's been almost a year that he's been at the helm of things here in South Africa. He obviously tries to say that, in his public pronouncement interviews that he's done recently, that it's all about the change in sentiment and how South Africa is seen in a much more positive light compared to the Jacob Zuma years. What is definitely a feather in his cap is that people are now kind of talking about real issues. Issues of inequality in the country, issues of land in the country, issues of economic development in the country, issues of jobs in the country, more than just being bogged down by personality politics and corruption surrounding one particular individual. He made a series of promises of things that he'd do in the State of the Nation address, and to his credit, a lot of those processes have now been playing themselves out. So he had the jobs summit, he had the investment summit. He obviously tries to pride himself as a man of the economy, to bring economic change. And is announced some sort of stimulus plan for the economy. And at that investment summit I mentioned, he announced, you know, so many jobs are going to be created and so much new investment is going to be poured into South Africa. People who have poured over those particular details have said, have to question whether all those big announcements are actually new investments or just, you know, a kind of repackaging of old investments. But nonetheless, that has occurred. He's got panels on land reform. He's announced a new national director of public prosecution, so, you know, a shake-up there. And there's also the commissions of inquiry into state capture, into SARS, etc. So all of that occurring, kind of showing change happening. But obviously, the real test of all of this is whether these plans, whether these summits will produce their results. And when we talk about state capture and corruption, lots of revelations coming out, but will that translate into prosecutions and setting a precedent so that this will not occur in the future?
Those are the big questions. When we look at his current position, why does he still skirt on shaky ground?
So there's a number of areas, I guess, that you know, we can focus on in answering this particular question. I'd perhaps just want to listen to what he has to say on this himself. He had quite an interesting interview with 702 last week. He came into the studio and spoke to Kwalani Gwala about a number of issues. Let's take a listen to some of the issues that were raised with him. One about the internal problems in the ANC. The other about, you know, still having personalities like Patabile Dlamini on his cabinet. Let's take a listen to that and we'll elaborate on some of the challenges that he faces and why, you know, things could still go away for Ramaphosa.
But I'm really glad to be here, to be having a conversation with you where you'll be answering all my questions.
Oh, thank you. Thanks indeed, Mr. President.
As we look around, we shouldn't just look at, for instance, oh, the price of petrol has gone up and therefore the new dawn is over. Now the price of petrol has gone down. Does it mean that this new concept of a new dawn, a beginning of renewal is dead and finished? Mm. No. Many people in our country are feeling hopeful. So we've had to deal with a multiplicity of things,
sure,
which are caused by a whole number of factors. And a combination of our strategies and the initiatives that we are taking are definitely going to start moving us forward. Cleaning up is going to happen. Much as there's a pushback, much as there's a fight back, I can tell you, Kolani, that that fight back and that pushback is never going to succeed. And those people who are trying to push back need to know very clearly our determination is resolute. Mm. We are determined that our country must be defined as a country that will get people who are in positions of power to do things correctly. She is doing a good job in advancing the cause of women in our country, and she's really raised the bar.
If you touch Batabile Dlamini, you will see flames. So there are people in the ANC who think that she's untouchable, or she's one of those who are untouchable. Do you feel empowered?
Well, as president of the ANC, president of the country, yes, I'm empowered. I have not seen any flames.
Well, because you haven't fired her.
I have not seen any flames anywhere in the African National Congress. And everyone who is appointed and removed from cabinet, they have to subscribe to the convention we have to be disciplined members of the African National Congress and know that they are deployed. So when the information presentation request was made by Musi Maimane, it was information asking for a contract between Bosasa and my son. Hmm. And the lawyers then said there is no such a contract, which is true. The contract is between his company and Bosasa. But be that as it may, I answered the question honestly, and there is just no corruption whatsoever in all this.
So Touching there, Mufti, on a number of factors that point to the shaky ground that he finds himself on, the issue that one of the issues there is that issues of corruption have been painted against him, and obviously the DA and other opposition parties trying to say that there's nothing different between Zuma and Ramaphosa, and that Ramaphosa was part of the Zuma executive all along, so he carried on those same corrupt values and there's nothing new about him. But obviously the jury is still out, Ramaphosa being quite resolute there that in his heart of hearts he believes no corruption was done. So he's come, you know, into the radar there for some kinds of attacks on his personality and persons around him. But the bigger issue in all of this is ANC internal politics. He still has, a very uncertain deputy president, David Mabuza, who many people believe can still be very unpredictable. You have very shadowy figures in the ANC top six who are not necessarily well wishers of President Ramaphosa. You had a very sinister meeting that occurred at the Maharani Hotel in September in Durban, where the former president, Jacob Zuma, was president, and members of the top six were present. And there are, suspicions that there may be a fight back by Jacob Zuma. And we are also entering into an election year, so there can be a very dirty political terrain within the ANC, or from the opposition parties trying to dig up dirt and create scandals to fight their election, their particular election campaigns. So, in all of this, it's very, very perhaps a sensitive time for the ANC to be able to traverse through all of this and enter the elections quite cleanly. They seem to be quite buoyant about the elections, but even though the elections are just in about 5 months' time, anything can happen in that particular period. And then the other issue is the economy and, issues of jobs, social instability, inequality in South Africa, rising prices of commodities, and that is obviously a major issue for Ramaphosa to traverse through. Being a man who claims to be a man of the economy, will he be able to satisfy the needs of ordinary South Africans beyond fancy-sounding plans and rhetoric? So that's, I guess, the kind of scenario that we face and that faces him as well as we enter into the crunch year of 2019.
Yes, certainly it has been an eventful year in terms of the leadership of the country and the ANC. It has been interesting observing how he has conducted himself, and critical times lie ahead. Avisap, we appreciate your time this morning for giving us the overview in terms of the leadership, in terms of the role that Ramaphosa has played. Jazakumullah khair, and we look forward to chatting to you tomorrow morning again, inshallah.
Barakallahu feek. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. That was Hafiz Ibrahim Musa with the daily edition of Looking Back at 2018.